Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo.
And Katie Godden from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. In this episode, we'll be looking at generative AI and the best approach HR and learning teams can take to navigate the latest technology must-have to face the industry. So James, why are we talking about this now?
I think we are because probably everyone else is as well. And we're seeing lots and lots of discussion if you're in any sort of work social media. So if you're on LinkedIn or anything else, there are literally floods and floods of posts now on AI, generative AI. Every tool in the world seems to be putting an AI layer over the top of what it already has. Also, I noticed recently that when you do log into LinkedIn and start a post, you can actually just get AI to write the post for you. So, you know, this technology seems to be everywhere. And even those people who tend to bury their head in the sand and ignore any technology advance probably can't ignore this one. So that's why we felt it was important to give our perspective and try and provide a bit of balance, because it can feel like when things like this are happening that you need to jump on that bandwagon, and people get that FOMO, so the fear of missing out and should they be doing something. So we wanted to have a bit of time to share our thoughts, our perspectives, and some approaches people can take.
Yes, so this isn't the first wave of kind of new technology that's meant to change the world. So how should we approach this one?
I think, you know, right, going back to the printing press, to mobile phones, to even email. And, you know, I'm at the age where at the start of my career, email was a pretty new thing at work, you know. And if we look forward to where we are now, those things have come in and they have changed the way of work, or they've changed the way that we do things. So mobile phones make us instantly contactable at any point, you know, that then evolves into smartphones, etc. So these come in and they do change the world. They change how we interact with things. They change how we see ourselves. They change our relationships. They almost change our self-worth as well. And I think that's one of the biggest things with generative AI, is potentially because this is a tool that can start to, or if you think about the sci-fi view of this and some of the views that people have, this is almost a tool that can start to learn for itself. So it's artificial intelligence, and it's using huge data sets to start to be able to answer questions for people, or to do all sorts of things, and do things in a way that we could never do. And we've been using some of this stuff for ages without really understanding that we're using it. So if you do use your mobile phone and you're using text and it's suggesting words that you should maybe, you know, type from the first couple of letters, or even without typing letters now, it says, well, you've put a couple of words in, I'm going to guess what your next word should be in that sequence. So it's a technology that has huge applications in lots of different spaces. So it can be layered across the top or integrated in lots of the tools or technology we're already using. There's also a bit of a gold rush for everyone trying to win at AI. So there's so many tools out there. It can be a bit overwhelming at the moment because you're seeing thousands of new tools seemingly come onto the market every week. And even if they're not true AI tools, it's almost become a bit of a marketing sell, where if you don't call yourself AI or say you've got AI in a product, you probably won't get funding if you're trying to grow a business. And also you'll feel that you're going to miss out on customers. And I know, Katie, when we were at Learning Tech this year, we noticed that the marketing fad seemed to be AI in everything. And how true that AI is, or what value it's adding, is questionable. But there's a huge rush to get that in place. Also because AI is able to learn from itself. So you can train these models to start to learn and develop and enhance themselves. And you can go out and use some of the tools now in a rudimentary fashion to almost set them a task. So the task might be, I want to set up a new business. And you put a little bit of information about that, and then almost an an overseeing AI model can then set other tasks for AI to run and go, okay, so we need to have a financial model, we need to have a brand strategy, we need to have some marketing materials, and it can set all of those different sub elements of AI off to almost create your business. Now, that in essence can be a little bit scary, because you could go, well, any, it lowers barriers to entry, which could all be good, but it also can create just the ability for anyone to do anything without real thought. So there's lots of possibilities. And alongside that, there's huge amounts of risks and things that should be considered as well. So, you know, a very long-winded answer to your question of how should we approach this? But I think in terms of approaching it is start to think about what it is, start to think about what you understand, and maybe don't ignore it, but learn at your pace, because some people are going to be early adopters and want to jump on with every new bit of technology. Other people are, I'm going to get on board when everyone else has worked it out. But this is something that you should be starting to learn about, show an interest in, and increasing your awareness about, because otherwise you're going to become left out of conversations and feeling almost a little bit illiterate in that space if it's not something you know some of the jargon about, or you know some of those other things about.
So you've kind of alluded to that AI is everywhere. So it's not specific on a particular kind of industry or department or anything like that. So anyone's got access to AI at whatever level that might be. And it can help them with anything that they're doing, especially if you've kind of got like those more office jobs, I guess. So how should HR and learning teams approach that specifically?
I think there's a few different approaches, and I'm seeing lots of different things out there, but most of them are at the task and efficiency side of the world. So if we're thinking about learning, it might be people are learning to write prompts to be able to create content quicker. So I need to put together some content on subject matter X. I can ask a generative AI tool, and that could be something like ChatGPT, or there's many out there, but if you've heard of these tools, or if you've played around with some of these tools, you can go in and you can ask it to, you know, write me an article about this, write me an introduction about this, structure a training session for me to help our sales team enter a new market. And you can add huge amounts of complexity to your prompts to fine tune and enhance those results. In the HR world, there's all sorts of things you can do. It's interesting. I did a little experiment where I was took a job description, I created job advert from that using AI. I then used that job advert to create applications. And, you know, so you can almost see AI going through a whole process from either side. So, you know, the scope is huge, and you can use it to go out and say, right, if I'm starting with a blank sheet of paper, and I want to get to something, so I want a structure and outline of a training session, or if I want an outline job spec, or if I want an outline set of interview questions or an assessment center written, it can be really helpful in giving you something to start from and save a huge amount of time. The danger becomes if you're doing it to enter areas you have no knowledge in. So if I was writing a training course about something I didn't have myself or a subject matter expert to fine tune what was coming back, I could be putting out misinformation or missing out stuff that's vitally important because I'm not aware. So you can't necessarily rely on stuff 100%, but it certainly helps in smoothing the way. So that's where I'm seeing most people using AI at the moment. There's certain elements of personalization out there. But I think the real opportunity for HR is to look at it in a more strategic way, because this is potentially a fundamental change to industry, to business, to the way we work, to the way we interact with each other, and again, to the value we place on each other. Because if we think about industrial revolution and things become more efficient, and we start to say, well, manual labor changes over time, and we've been through all of those things, we're now seeing some of those traditional knowledge jobs and knowledge economy value adds able to be taken by AI in a far more effective way. So if you think about where you previously could be an expert on something and be able to, you know, look through all of the legal cases. Well, actually, large language models, or, you know, can take in that big data and they can crunch through stuff and they can push out information far quicker than maybe a human can, and they can store more information than any human could possibly read and pull down on that. So a very well defined and focused AI tool can actually be replacing some of that knowledge work, and therefore the value that role has or that industry has changes. And you might find that whole industries or whole businesses are disrupted because their business model is now obsolete in some ways, or they need to start adding value in different ways. And that may be the whole business, it may be part of a business, it might be a subsection of a business, or just a particular function or profession within businesses. So the first thing I think people should be doing is stepping back and looking, as a business person, how is AI going to positively impact our business? How's it going to shake up our industry and create different competition, or have to get us to create a different USP or different value for our customers? Also, how are we going to protect our intellectual property going forward? Because in effect, how AI is working at the moment is it's feeding on all the information out there that's commonly held, that's then fed into models. But using that technology, organizations are able to take their proprietary knowledge and plug those into AI tools and models, which are then able to provide really fine-tuned information, data, insight, and all of those things that then fall out of that in a way that creates a different set of value, or a value that people might not have been able to create before. So I think the first point is to not just jump into how can we do what we're currently doing quicker and better and more efficiently, but how is this going to fundamentally change what we do, how we do it, and who we do it for, and when we do it. And those bigger questions allow you as a strategic HR or learning person to think in a different way, rather than just, I need to produce more training content material, or yeah, that's going to make putting an interview script together easier.
So that's how to approach things, I guess, from a business perspective, but you're going to have different contributors in that. So how should kind of individuals, specific departments, etc., approach this as well?
As most of our audience are in HR and learning development, if you then take that down from a business perspective to a functional perspective, it's then in a similar way questioning whether your function is still doing the same things. So are you creating the same value? And we've seen a lot of, say, discussion around education and exams. So, you know, how do I rely on trusting someone who might have answered their exam question or their school assignment or their essay in using ChatGPT? And again, I'd step back from that and saying, are we still testing the right things? So if you're, for example, going through a recruitment process, are you actually just recruiting the way you've always done it? And some of those things are going to become obsolete because I can write a really good covering letter. You know, you might turn around and go, well, if someone's really able to use all the tools at their disposal and outperform other people, that's the type of mindset we need, or whatever. But it's stepping back and seeing those activities you're carrying out. It might be that using some of the tools, you're able to crunch data far more effectively and get a more holistic view. So as a learning professional, maybe you're able to get better at diagnosing where the business needs to focus on, or where you're missing skills, or where there's opportunities you're not taking. So I think it's allowing that to enhance what you're delivering in your role, but stepping back again and not just diving in and going, that's a really cool shiny tool and I can do this, and getting down into that place that it's sometimes easy to get dragged into. And then you're, I think, down into that space of the individual contributor, and once you're sure, either in your functional role or any other role that you're performing, that you are doing the right thing, you should then be using the tools to drive efficiency and allow you to spend time on more value-adding tasks or you know, building relationships or whatever. And some of, and again, that's like any of these tools that have come in over time that have driven efficiency, make sure that is driving efficiency. Effectively, email drove efficiency, but now it's almost, you get swamped with so many emails, it's gone the other way. So how are you going to use these tools to focus in on the right things, streamline some of those processes or tasks you have to do that maybe seem overly administrative or anything else? So there's that as an individual contributor. And I'd also recommend that this isn't just something for work. This is something that can help in all areas of your life. So there's lots of AI tools out there for personal use, to drive efficiency, to help with task management outside of work. And again, when I was experimenting at the very early stages of ChatGPT coming out and seeing how do I use this tool, the areas I experimented in were not work areas. I just thought, how can I use this for outside work? And I started to, you know, look at various different things I could do. So I was planning to go on holiday and I used it to do something that Google couldn't have done. So if I go in and say, okay, right, I want to go to X country for a couple of weeks and this is what I want to do, if I ask Google that question, or ask Google before they started to integrate more AI tools into it, that question, what it would have done is produce me a load of point links. And that's quite an arduous process to work through all of those links to get to an answer. Whereas asking ChatGPT that same question, I was able to set some parameters. So I'm going for X number of weeks. This is who's going. We want to travel in this way. We want to be sustainable. These are the types of things we enjoy doing. These are the things we don't enjoy doing. So it's almost like a personal travel agent it acted as for me. And it put together an itinerary. And that itinerary was actually pretty good. And then I was able to fine tune it and go, don't like that bit, add more of this in. So it provides, again, a conversation you can keep building to. But if you're not sure or haven't used these tools, often picking an area such as that, you can use it for menu planning. There's huge amounts of creative ways you can use some of these tools to help in your life, but you're only limited by your own creativity and the problems you want to solve. And you know, speaking to other people, see how they're using it. And I think that allows you to start to feel comfortable with the tool, start to understand the possibilities of the tool before you then start taking it back into the workplace.
Yeah, I think that's a really good recommendation to really understand kind of the power of AI, because like you said, it's everywhere at the moment. And like even my parents talk about AI and like their limited understanding of it. But when you actually have a conversation and explain the things that it can and can't do, it, etc., like it kind of opens their mind to it a bit more, because I think you've still got that kind of ethical barrier as well, especially kind of in a workplace setting, where is it ethical to use the things like AI? So what's kind of your opinion on that, do you think?
And I think the ethics is a really interesting point. And you'll see lots of the conversation is around ethics and not getting into the practical uses. You tend to have some people looking at very practically, other people stuck in the ethics of, will this mean that we'll all be a jobless economy because AI will take over the world and we'll all just be sat at home with nothing to do, and we'll have to have a universal wage to pay us all so that we can live, and then, well, we won't actually need to do anything because AI does it. So is it the end of existence, or is AI going to decide that it wants to exterminate us all and we're going to end up in one of those sci-fi films from that we've seen in the past, and, you know, whether it's Terminator or whatever else, that the world is going to take over. So I think the ethics are interesting in terms of, again, globally, where does this sit? What does it mean for humanity? What does it mean for individual self-worth, contribution, skills of the future? There's huge amounts of conversations there. And then you get other layers of ethical conversation around, and people are trying to show where the tool is, falls down. So you know, you can't rely on this because it gives back false information at times. And there's a term for this in AI, which is called a hallucination, which makes it sound, you know, quite nice and fluffy and always, you know, it's a bit, little bit naive. But again, this is about understanding the power and the scope of the tool. So you should be using this where there is an appetite for an element of risk, or you know, you don't need 100% accuracy, or where you've got some level of, you know, human oversight or checking, like we talked about, you know, at a very basic level, putting together a training course, you wouldn't just let AI run and do that without checking at the moment. Might be some point in the future where we start to get to those levels of accuracy and we start to eliminate hallucinations in particular use cases. So I think people get dragged into all sorts of conversations around this and, oh, well, I tried it and it didn't quite work. And that's almost saying, well, it didn't quite work today, but this is a model that's going to learn from itself and it's going to evolve. So some people will take that mindset. You've then also seen, so you've got tools such as Midjourney, which and DALL-E, which can produce images for you. And a lot of those have had feedback that actually those images are full of, you know, potentially discriminatory view of the world. So if you ask it to produce a picture of a chief exec, you know, will it be mainly, you know, elderly white males? And you go, well, probably it is. And then my challenge back is, this is just working off the data we fed into it. So what this is doing is holding up a mirror to us as the human race and saying, this is how that currently looks. We may not like it and we may want it to be different, but all it is doing is reflecting those things that are in place. And that's either the imagery, that's either the reality of the situation. And we haven't quite got to, you know, equal opportunities into all of those roles or whatever it happens to be. So I think there's an element of, if that's happening, then those tools can be trained and we can learn from the mistakes that the tools are reflecting back at us. But there's some lessons to be learned from all of those things about what we should do. And always go back to sort of locus of control. So what can I do something about? What should I be concerned about? And what, you know, what can I influence? And all of those general approaches we take at work. And if I'm spending my life talking about the societal issues of, we've got these images coming because of what we've done in society, yes, I might be concerned about that. I can probably have a tiny bit of influence. Can I control it? No. So yes, that then we need to be doing what we can to let governments and regulation and businesses and organizations take control of some of those things. But then as we roll it back into what can I actually control? So if you're in a business or HR role, what can you do to make sure that this is used in an ethical way? You know, if you're buying tools, are you asking the right questions about the data sets they're using, about what they're doing to drive out bias? What if you're using or getting tools in, you're not using them in situations where accuracy is more important than the tool is able to deliver? So there's lots of different things you can start doing within your control. There's also thinking again about lots of different things. And if we think about copyright infringement, so who owns the copyright of stuff that's happening in these tools? If you're using these tools and sharing your business's confidential data, have you thought about where that data is going? Because it might be really easy to go, let's shove my 20-page report and ask an AI tool to write a half page or a three-line summary of it. That might save me loads of time, but inadvertently I might be putting data into a domain I have no control over, because we're not very good at reading T's and C's that we tick up as we sign up to these tools. And again, a lot of these tools are offering you free versions to get you in. Part of that is they want, you know, to build users, test their use cases, start to understand and learn from the questions you're asking. So we're doing a mass experiment in all these tools on lots of people. So you need to step back and consider, what are the risks, but also what are the opportunities? So lots of things for people to consider. And I think the ethics are massively important, but I would say, again, back to, what can we influence? What can we not actually do anything about? Forget those things a little bit and look at what you can control and how you can set good practices, good approaches, because there's a whole etiquette around this that we need to teach people how to use these tools, how to bring them to work, how to use them in a safe and ethical way. And that's where I think you should be starting.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think, like with anything that's new, you're going to have to learn things and it's going to have to be a balance. Like, I remember being at work like about 10 years ago, and I know Google wasn't new then, but people were a bit scared about people within the workplace using Google, you know, to search for things. And because it kind of sat outside the realm of what you were being taught and what you were being given as tools in the workplace, it was a bit scary to people. But now I think it's more common practice to be able to do that. So, for example, if you're doing something in Excel, you don't have to have the purchased Excel course. You could go onto Google and you can trust it. But I know years ago, was that information particularly accurate? Maybe not. But we've learned to kind of have those trusted sites and what your kind of go to is a bit more. And it's become, I guess, more of a tool that is trusted within the workplace. And I think AI will be similar than that, even though I think the power behind the potential behind AI is far greater than, well, it's probably not far greater. It's probably just, I've grown up with Google, so I've just always thought it was there, I guess. But and then seeing something like AI come in and the power and the potential that's got, you can see why people are a bit unsure of it, I guess, is the right terminology to use. But it does have a lot of potential.
And yeah, I think it's definitely got potential and it's got risks and it's new. So it's going to not necessarily be a smooth journey. There's going to be winners and losers along the way. People are engineering AI into solutions to just have AI in solutions at the moment, which aren't really solving real problems and are probably very gimmicky. And so there's an element of stepping back and away from those things and not just rushing in or getting caught up in the excitement of something new, but being a bit cautious and being testing things out. And you're going to have people across your organization who are at different awareness levels, different appetite levels for this. And one of the things I think is important is this is a type of evolution that needs to take everyone together. And I don't mean everyone at the same time, but take everyone together. And you know, email came in, we have to spend time bringing people along, we have to create the space for people to experiment. So, you know, if you've got a very strict IT policy which allows people to do nothing new or access anything new, you're going to stop that innovation and curiosity. So how can you control things by ensuring those early adopters are savvy about the data and security risks, are, you know, thinking about those things and can understand what they're doing, but you encourage them? And how can you then bring people along on that journey? And I'd thoroughly advise almost team approaches or whole company approaches to some of this stuff, because you'll find that teams are very good at helping each other through some of these things if you make it a collaborative vision. So if you go back, if I was back in an in-house role leading an HR or an L&D team, I would be getting them together and thinking about how we're going to approach this, not just letting our tech expert or the person who does systems worry about this. I would be getting the whole team together because this has a collective impact on the team, the function, productivity, what we focus on, what's important, what's no longer important. So bringing people into that space, and that's where we've started to see with our clients that we can help them to navigate that, because we're used to helping people through that technological evolution and what that means as a change for their team. And having that support through that process can get people to think about things in a way that's realistic, achievable, forward focused, has some vision, but isn't scary. It's, you know, it has that achievability. And setting a structure and a vision for how you're going to embrace this coming into your business, I think, is really important and can help you feel that you're not either missing out or that you're experimenting and don't know what you're doing, because you're doing it from a foundation of, we know why we're doing this and we know that this is going to change and evolve. And, you know, we're not worried about picking the right tool at this moment, because half the tools around at the moment will probably not be there in 6 to 8 months. And again, at a personal level, I've seen all the tools and think, oh, that looks interesting and that looks interesting. I could have spent thousands and thousands of pounds just buying another license to try this and another license to try that. So having that ability to step back and go, these are the areas we want to focus on, these are the tools we're going to try or the approaches we're going to try, and we're going to do that in a structured way, but we're also going to be aware of there's new stuff coming in, so we're going to have half an eye open for new things coming into the market as well, and you know, helping to drive and fit that into your business. And I think if an HR team can take that approach, they're role modeling how the rest of the functions in their business and their business as a whole should be approaching this situation.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, and it's definitely a tool that's going to be with us in all aspects of our life in the future. And I think you and I could sit here and talk for ages about it and the potential and the risks and everything else that comes with all of that. But I think we'll leave it there for today. So thank you for joining me, James. If people want to connect with you and find out more about AI and about the Learning Effect and what we do, how do they get in touch?
So the best way to get in touch is either connect to me on LinkedIn, go on and visit our website, so or email in or pick up the phone. All of those contact details are on our website or on my LinkedIn profile. And I'd love to hear from people as to what they're doing to approach this, stuff that's worked, stuff that hasn't worked, because this is the sort of space where I don't think, well, you can be an expert in it, but for most of us, we can't really be an expert in it because it's moving so quickly and in so many ways. Unless that is your entire focus, you're not going to be on top of everything. So building that network of people that you can feed into, that you can bounce off trusted sources, or, you know, good sources of, well, that's podcasts or blogs to follow or people to follow, etc. So yeah, I'd love to, you know, be connected to more people who are interested in this space and sharing our learning together, because that's the only way we're going to move through this.
Awesome. Thank you, James. We'll put those details in the show notes below.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.